This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack
and Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, how Apple will be able to determine if you're walking steady thanks to a new update.
Plus, we dive into how someone broke the internet and brought down the web's top sites.
Also on the show, why Amazon's founder is heading to space and bringing his brother.
And we hear from the makers of a hydrofoil water taxi that's coming to a city near you.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
This episode of The Feed is powered by TP-Link. TP-Link routers and technology can remove wireless pain points in your home, so you have better performance for working, streaming, and gaming.
Trending up.
Well, it's a jammed-packed show. Lots going on. People are getting out and about. If you look on social, things are starting to happen. I started to see people booking trips. I was reading the news. Oh, it just seems so close yet so far, Amber.
You know, I wrote in my newsletter this week, there's a term that a lot of people are sharing called FONO. So it's like FOMO from the early 2000s, where we talked about fear of missing out. Well, FONO is fear of normal. And the idea is many people are worried and have anxiety about going back to normal. Maybe they're just not ready to go face to face with people. Maybe they're scared about going out in public because COVID-19 is still a very real threat. But whatever it is, people are afraid.
You know what it could be? Or now they actually have to be on their best behavior. That's what I think people are scared of, because people have been saying this to me as well. They're like, oh, I'm terrified, or it's weird, or I like working from home. Or I even heard or read some articles where people were refusing to go back to work because they liked the work from home. And so I just thought it was interesting what COVID-19 has done, because I get health concerns, I get all of that stuff, but we're coming out of the woods from there. And it's just interesting how society reacts. So we'll see how it all unfolds. But speaking of unfolding, Apple is at it again. I have such a big question about this one. Do people care anymore? I know that's a horrible thing to say, but lots of stuff from Apple.
Yeah, I mean, people always care about Apple. They'll always have big fans, especially online. I think what's a little bit different with the WWDC event is that it's focused on developers. So what's happening on the developer side? And what's interesting this year is there are some new updates that are essentially just updates of operating systems, you know, technical improvements. But I was really impressed to see some of the other features. One we teased off the top of the show as an example, and that is a feature that is focused on health, and Apple is really leading the way. And what it does is it allows you with your iPhone to analyze your walking steadiness to flag if potentially you're at risk of a fall. And I'm just continuously impressed with what Apple is doing on the health front.
Do you know what else? This actually solved the problem of people being scared about going back to normal. Apple says that it's opening up Siri to third-party manufacturers and devices. So that means you'll be able to take your new best friend, which you developed the relationship and dependence on during lockdown, with you everywhere you go now. So that's some silver lining, some news there for people. I guess the only thing that I say when I say I don't care, do people care anymore? It's these big events. It's these annual hyped up things. I think that we're kind of moved past that now. And I think as a society, it's like things get released and technology gets updated regularly. So I'm not into these big events anymore, I guess what it is.
Well, I think also it's not so much that the events aren't getting attention, but it's that there is other news happening that is much more significant to people's lives. And we are really inundated in terms of those headlines that are directly related to whether it's our health and safety during COVID or any other breaking news that is taking place. So I think in some ways it feels like what happens is these events still happen. They still have their fans, but they just don't get as much of the hoopla as they used to, because there's just so much else going on in the world and so many other people covering what's going on in the world and arguing about what's going on in the world.
Okay. So two things there. I love the use of hoopla, the word. And second, you eloquently put what I was thinking into words. And that's how this relationship works. Now, speaking of news that really shocked the world, the internet kind of got broken. So basically, lots and lots of websites all over the world, very big name websites, Reddit, Amazon, even the New York Times, BBC, they all appeared to have outages earlier this week. And this caused a lot of stress and a lot of problems for many, many people.
Yeah, you're right. So what took place on Tuesday morning is people tried to access a number of sites that you've mentioned already and weren't able to do so. Now, the interesting thing about this is many people, their heads may go directly to, oh, this was a cyber attack. But just want to be clear that an American cloud computing services provider that provides services for all of these websites said in a statement, according to Mashable, that they were investigating potential impact to performance, particularly with some of their specific servers. So the idea is that it was a technical issue on their end, which eventually got fixed. But you're right. I mean, these are some of the biggest news organizations in the world, as well as Etsy and Target and Twitch. So it definitely affected a lot of people in terms of access. And I do love the Mashable headline that someone literally broke the internet.
Finally, it happened, Amber. We joke about it, but somebody broke it. I know we're joking about it now, but this is quite serious, because when you think about how heavily reliant we are on technology and these databases, and I believe even I think it was a UK government website was also affected. So can imagine then with so many companies reliant on cloud computing, everything going being digitized. I just hope that there are backups of backups for when this happens, especially when it comes to health records and health services. And we're going to see more and more of these outages. And we've talked a lot about ransomware and all this other stuff. So I hope that people and companies are putting as much money into cybersecurity, into their backup systems when things go wrong or go down, as they do when it comes to trying to get dollars from customers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've talked about this before, but the threat landscape is getting more significant in terms of the attack surface or the number of connected devices in the world. So it's almost like this perfect storm where more people are online, more people are dependent, more cybersecurity people are out there trying to fix things as hackers are coming out in droves. So it's an ongoing issue that we'll continue to cover. We just have like a minute left. Michael, I'm sure you love this.
Well,
Jeff Bezos is going to space.
If you give up, where do you go, Amber?
It's true. You go to space, and this is an interesting story. The plan is that he will also bring his younger brother with him, Mark Bezos, to space. They will go on this flight together, and this is happening on July 20th. I mean, that's pretty soon.
Well, I think this is the thing. So obviously, everybody thought it was a bit shocking that Jeff Bezos was stepping down from Amazon as the CEO. And now this all kind of clicks and makes sense, because obviously you can't have your CEO going to space, because unfortunately, let's talk about the negatives. Something could go wrong, and we hope it doesn't, but he may not come back. And mm-hmm. So obviously, if you're in charge of one of the largest and most powerful and wealthiest companies in the world, that's probably not great for your workers and your investors and everything else. But this is, it does seem to kind of, you know, stack up in, you know, I think he steps down or officially in June, and then he's going to space in July. So it is quite interesting and fascinating, but it is a touching story, regardless of all the other noise and all the other headlines. You know, when you do hear him speak about his brother and his family and their dream, like, he's always wanted to go to space. I think it was since he was 5 years old, and he built a company, and now he's able to do that. That alone is pretty impressive, if nothing else.
We all have dreams to do different things, and this is his. And it is pretty amazing. Just to be clear before we wrap this up, that this is approximately, I believe, according to CNN, an 11-minute flight that will reach more than 60 miles above Earth. So just want to be clear that
he's not
going to Mars or the moon, but still impressive. But just wanted to clarify that with people. So he's going to space, but maybe not to the places you might expect.
Yet. When we return, our tech friend Mark Saltzman is joining us with the latest gift ideas for Father's Day.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Wish list.
Well, Father's Day is just around the corner. So joining us now to share some great gift ideas is Mark Saltzman. We're going to talk about some gadgets for dad for both inside the home and outside the home. Mark, let's start with inside the home, particularly for that dad who loves to game, maybe even with their kids.
Yeah, for sure. Let's start with a pair of new and exclusive games for the versatile Nintendo Switch. Of course, the popular gaming system that lets you play on the go, or when you're at home, you can dock it and play on your big screen TV, of course. So out on June 11th, Game Builder Garage lets you create, play, and share your own games. So it blurs the lines between game player and game creator. You don't need any prior experience at all. You don't have to be a coder or anything. You get these guided lessons with this visual game programming walkthrough to make your own games. And it doesn't matter what kind of genre you're into. It could be, role-playing games or space shooters or adventure games, sports, whatever. And then you can share them, as I mentioned, and also, of course, download other people's creations as well. It's only $39. So a lot of bang for your buck. And then later this month, Mario Golf Super Rush debuts. So that comes out on the 25th. So when you want to hit the fairway in real life, but you're busy working, you got to make a living, then at least you can play virtually as or against your favorite Nintendo character and with your friends too, up to 4 players locally or online on their Nintendo Switch. So there's lots of different courses and challenges to choose from, and even with motion controls, kind of reminiscent of the Wii days, the Nintendo Wii, where you can actually hold the Joy-Con controller in both hands and swing it like a real golf club in order to hit the ball if you don't want to use the buttons. So I like that option as well.
Very cool. And we're going to talk about something else that is for outside. This is particularly cool, especially as more people are entertaining safely outside on patios and in backyards.
Yeah. I've got a couple of great outdoor gadgets to chat about, but I think you're hinting at this laser projector that's portable. So it's from Epson, called the Epic Vision Mini EF12. And mini is the operative word. It's a small little portable but powerful projector that does not use a lamp that you have to replace. It does use laser for light and laser beam. and you can project it against your wall outside your home up to 150 inches. And no screen required. You can, of course, bring it inside and use it on your wall or ceiling inside as well for gaming or sports, streaming TV shows or movies. But I love the idea that you can bring it outside for some summer movie nights with maybe the neighbors and their kids. There's sound by Yamaha. There's built-in wireless connectivity, so you can stream from your devices, but it does also have built-in Android TV. So you can sign into your favorite services and stream right from that projector. Again, it's called the Epic Vision Mini EF12 Streaming Laser Projector. It costs $12.99 at Epson.ca.
Some really good prices there. And speaking of streaming, you're going to share with us a little device that's also in some areas at a discount, but has some amazing quality when it comes to picture and voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Roku, they've been around for a while. As you guys know, you plug it into your TV, whether it's a smart TV or not, it has some exclusive content now. Their own Roku channel has what's called Roku Originals. They acquired all that Quibi content, tons and tons of content. So there, and that's all for free, but you can also access your favorite free and paid services like Netflix and Amazon and Disney, all with an intuitive remote, only $49 for what I'm referring to is the Roku Express 4K. So this is not the entry-level model. It's just one step up from it, but only $49. You get that remote with it, or you can use an app if you prefer on your phone. It supports, as the name suggests, 4K resolution with HDR or high dynamic range for those TVs that support the better contrast and brightness and color. And then stronger Wi-Fi with this model as well. So you might not be close to your router, but won't matter because this new box from Roku, and I call it a box, but it's like the size of just a little bit bigger than I'd say it's size of a pack of Tic Tacs, but it'll do the trick as you're streaming 4K content on your big screen TV. So again, it's called Roku Express 4K.
I think also, sorry, just with the Roku Express, for the US listeners, I think Amazon's actually knocked off 25%. So you could even get it for even cheaper. So, even around $30 or so. So great deal.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
All right. So I have to tell you, Mark, that I was just looking at your list and I realized I have three things on your list already. So,
of course you do.
I know. So this one is especially useful. It's the Amazon Ring Video Doorbell. This is the Pro 2. And I will say that we do have Ring doorbells and cameras at our house.
This is why you don't let me in, right? You can see me.
That's Michael again.
Well, actually, I mean, we've had a lot of bike thefts in our neighborhood. And I will say there is kind
that
of peace of
me.
Mind. with this product. So let's talk a little bit about that and how it works and how it can be helpful in terms of home security.
Sure. So as with its predecessors, the new Amazon Ring Video Doorbell Pro 2 lets you see who's at your door and talk with them, even if you're not home. They don't know the difference. But this has some advantages. So this is a premium wired video doorbell that has something called head-to-toe video. As the name suggests, you can see more of the video, both vertically as well as horizontally, which is comforting. Better audio. It's called HD audio, so you can hear clearer outside with the people you're chatting with. You can have your Alexa smart speaker, if you like, say something to, for example, a courier, like, please leave the package behind the railing, or whatever you tell your personal assistant to say for you. And then finally, bird's eye view. So it uses radar to detect motion on your property. You kind of see this mock overhead view of your property and the movement of that person, just for some, again, extra peace of mind. That's all built into this new Pro 2 model for $324.99 Canadian for that. And that's for the front of your home. But why don't we end off going back to the backyard? We already talked about having a projector there, which is awesome. But grills are now getting high tech. So the Traeger Ironwood family of wood pellet grills are awesome. This was my treat to myself about 18 months ago. And no looking back if you've used a gas barbecue or charcoal. So not only do these high tech grills are not only are they both barbecues and smokers in one, heated by wood pellets, which gives you amazing flavor out of your food, including for those carnivores like myself. But some of these models, these Ironwood models, have what's called Wi-Fi technology. So it uses Wi-Fi that lets you monitor your food on an app. Even if you're inside, you can see grill temperature. You can see the meat temperature as well. You get the thermometers with it and adjust all that. There's support for over 1,600 recipes on the app. You can set notifications. You can even use your smart speaker or Apple Watch to control it all as well. So it gives you a little bit of, you know, high-tech help if you want to be a grill master. Instead of keeping the, you know, opening up the lid, as they say, if you're looking, it's not cooking. So the Ironwood family, the 650 and the larger 885 have that Wi-Fi technology, and prices start at $15.99.
Very cool. Well, lots of stuff here for Dad at all price ranges, which is great. So, Mark, we wanted to thank you so much for joining us. And most importantly, happy early Father's Day to you.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate you having me on. All the best.
Up next, how to turn your words into beautiful pictures.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Aptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to look at some new and trending apps. This is really fun, Michael. It's called Word Swag, and it turns your words into beautiful photo text designs. This is a fun one. I mean, it's definitely something that I think a lot more people are doing, especially as they share quotes online. And it allows you to really just do anything with words, but turn it into something that can be shared as an image across social or beyond.
Yeah, and I really liked this idea just because obviously recently, well, aka in the last week, as everybody then knows, this is a day in the life of Michael B. For the week, I was seeing a lot of quotes pop up on Oprah Daily and a few other sites, and they do it so beautifully. And so I was wondering how you would do that in your own social feeds and how to do it easily, but also not look like, you know, when you're 19 trying to work out how to use a desktop. Yeah. So I thought, you know, there's got to be an app for that. And there is. And I just thought this was really nice because obviously a lot of people still are a little bit struggling. So I thought that it would be nice for people to create little sayings and quotes and send it to their friends or post it on social. And I don't remember if you did this as a kid. So we would do this for our friends. We would make little cards and we would use paper and we would make little flowers and designs. Or if it was the guys, they put sports things on it. I don't know. It's weird. And you'd put notes and nice quotes or nice messages and stuff and give them to each other. And so I thought this was kind of like the digital version. So I thought this couldn't hurt. It's WordSwagoner and a really neat, beautiful, easy to use app.
It's very cool. And it's available for iOS devices. And I have to say, on the App Store, I love the quote that they share as an example. Best quote on the internet: the grass is greener when you water it.
It's so true. Just so you know, because I've been doing a lot of walks, you can tell who's watering their lawn and who isn't. And it's the ones that are, it's nicer.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to move on to this next app. Also a great name, Nunu.
Yeah, Nunu. So I'll tell you what it is, and then I'm just wondering, will you let me do this? Nunu is a social decision-making platform where users join groups, share content, chat, take polls, and vote things up or down. You can also kind of make people do certain things. And so I was just wondering, would you let me make you do stuff via social? I thought it'd be cool.
Okay, so explain how that works in terms of how I'm going to let you do things.
Well, I just, you're not going to let me at all. But basically, the whole idea with this is, let's just look at it, first of all, from a social media platform perspective. So the idea is that it wants you to make it a more personalized experience. So the idea is to build polls and communities around certain topics. And then there are similar social polling apps like this. So if people might know Wishbone, for example. So this is kind of in that vein to start with. And then also the idea or the person behind this was thinking of trying to build, you know, the next Instagram or next TikTok and adding those layers of personalization.
Got it. So it's kind of like build your own adventure, but real time. So essentially you would be able to tell people what to do, like, oh, should I do this next or should I do that next? At least that's what it kind of looks like to me.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to control what someone does. What could go wrong, Michael?
Yeah, what could go wrong? What could, you know what? That is the best question. What could go wrong? Absolutely nothing. Let's crowdsource what I should do. Yeah,
it's a lot like that, but it's interesting because, it's super creative. And I think people who are online and who experiment and try different things, I mean, this is kind of like the excitement of live streaming way back in the day when people would put their lives online 24/7, you know, Big Brother is another sort of TV example of this, where we're sort of intrigued and interested in what people are doing, but this just gives you a role in that decision-making process.
Yeah. And I just, it gets into, you know, it's still similar, like it's got the rankings and all that kind of stuff. So when you think about it, and maybe I'm going too deep psychologically, but when we post stuff on Facebook and Instagram and we get the likes or we don't, you know, that's indirectly or directly kind of telling you what people like or don't like. So you're going to do more of something or less of something. This is at least being completely honest and you're going straight to the source and be like, hey, what do you think of this? Or, hey, this is what I'm doing. Should I do more? Or what do you think of this? So I like that directness. Mm-hmm. But obviously you should err on the side of caution when you're asking anybody what you should or shouldn't be doing. I never ask a person a question I don't know the answer to or want or know the answer I want to hear. It's just, otherwise it's just messy.
Okay. Once again, apps through the lens of Michael's life. And this is a super fun one. We'll do this quickly. It's called Video Shop, available for iOS and Android devices. I love this. There are so many awesome apps out there, Michael, to create short little videos with text and music. And this looks like another one that gives people the option to not have to go out and hire someone for thousands of dollars. You can do this all using the device you have in your pocket.
Yeah, because I find it difficult, depending on what, if you're on a laptop or whatever you're in, or if you need something in a hurry, it makes it so easy to trim all of the little parts you don't want. And you don't have to be, you know, an expert, as you said, and you can add even like slow motion and sound effects and adjust all kinds of things that you previously couldn't do unless you were an expert and using, you know, hardcore editing software. So it makes it really, really easy and also really, really easy to share across multiple channels. So really neat, really easy to do. And it'll make you looking all of your videos or your little clips on social media just like a professional.
Very, very cool. I love this. So just a quick recap. We talked about three apps. One is called WordSwag for iOS devices. The next one is called Nunu. And the third one, which is one you're probably going to want to use right away, is called VideoShop. And that's available for iOS and Android devices to make your own short mobile videos.
So Nunu example, Amber, would you let me in, or should Amber let me in when she sees me through her video doorbell, her Ring video doorbell? Everyone
That's
says yes.
A hard no.
If you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out, tweet us at Amber Mac and at AmBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag The Feed. Coming up, we talk to Candela's CEO about their new electric hydrofoil water taxi.
The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Candela's P12 electric hydrofoil water taxi has been unveiled, and it's costing 85% less than gas boats to run. So why is this important, and how will it change the transportation industry for the better? Well, to answer these questions and a whole lot more, we're joined by Gustav Hasselskog, he is the CEO and founder of Candela. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, Gustav. Can you start with the company itself, how it came together, and what was your first product and the idea behind it?
Yeah, so the true background to the company was basically that I had a motorboat, an American 25-foot boat with a huge V8 engine in it. And I realized this boat consumes like 15 times more fuel than my car. And I thought, so what can be done about that? And would it be eventually possible to make boats electric? So I started looking into different hull shapes and so on. And soon I realized that sort of the only way to get this going would be to use hydrofoils, as we do, meaning wings underneath the water, lifting up the entire hull and make that hull very light. And then it should be possible, I realized, to get both range and speed, which was not the case before that.
It's pretty amazing. And just for people who haven't had a chance to check it out, can you talk a little bit about how a hydrofoil boat works, and then maybe layer on the electrification piece in terms of the motor?
Yeah, so a hydrofoil is basically a wing. So the theory and the equations is the same as for a normal airplane, basically. The advantage when going in water is that the density of water is like 700 times higher than air. So you can have fairly small wings and go fairly slow compared to airplanes. But when you do that, you really cut down the friction, the drag you get. So in our case, we're cutting down the drag with something like 75 to 80% compared to a normal planing boat where you sort of push the water downwards with the hull. The challenge with the boat that we are building is the fact that the entire boat is up in the air and the wings are below the surface. That means that the center of gravity is high up and you're controlling the movements of the boat down in the water. So it's a bit like balancing a rod in your palm. So that means we have a lot of sensors and computers and a bit more now than 90,000 lines of software code to make this whole thing run.
And so just looking at that environmental impact further, how is the features and the form factor in regards to the boat going to help reduce the footprint that, you know, motorized boats and transportation have on the environment?
Yeah, I mean, that can be fairly significant. I mean, if you start with Sweden, the country where we are developing and building the boats, just the pleasure boat market is emitting more than the domestic air traffic. So the CO2 is considerable. And then you typically have much less regulations on combustion engine boats compared to cars, which are heavily regulated. And then you have the whole erosion topic, which in a city like Venice, as I mentioned, is can be a big topic, but it also erodes the shorelines in very many places. So yeah, so there's a kind of a bundle of different impacts here that we could get with such a system, and we now recently moved into public transportation, and that is a huge market, probably larger at the end than the pleasure boat market, which also means that the environmental impact that we will have on this technology is going to be even greater.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is just about the electrification piece, because I know you've alluded to this in terms of there being no wake. Also wanted to talk about the fact that it's an incredibly quiet boat, and this will potentially have a big impact on any type of vessel in any body of water, knowing that noise and pollution are such an issue right now. Can you talk a little bit about some of the benefits in terms of really just electrification and this boat being so quiet and this trend that we're seeing in this space?
I think in general, if you talk about the trend of electrification in boats, it's not moving very fast, and it's very much behind what we see in the car industry. And the reason is really that it is very difficult to electrify boats because they need so much energy to move. So the whole thing is moving very slowly. I think then hydrofoil is really a way to crack that equation, and that's what we're doing. So I think fairly soon you're going to see quite a lot of boats moving in this direction. We are also quite a lot helped by, at least in Europe, at quite a few lakes, there are restrictions against combusting any boats. So that really helps sort of to drive this whole transition. So that, like in Austria, it happens much faster than in other places. And I know in the, at least in the US, you have some lakes where you see the same thing. I think and hope that this can move pretty fast forward.
Well, listen, we just wanted to thank you for joining us today and talking about the future of boats, electrification, hydrofoil technology and beyond. And for people who want to check out more about what you do at your company, they can visit you online at candela.com. Gustav, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for being with you. Thank you.
Up next, we learn about a new mental wellness platform called New Life.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. New Life Health is a new mental wellness platform leveraging psychedelic-assisted therapies to help combat mental illness. To share how the company is leveraging knowledge graphs and artificial intelligence, Juan Pablo Capello is the company's CEO and is joining us now. This is absolutely fascinating, I think. Juan Pablo, let's start with how the company came about and came to be.
Well, in tech, I think one of, I think Jack Dorsey or somebody, or I think somebody was talking about Jack Dorsey, they said, you know, we were promised, flying cars and, you know, solving big problems like poverty and climate change. And what we got was Twitter and social networks. And so we really, as technologists, you know, just began to think about what are the big problems that humanity's facing. And when you think about the mental wellness crisis, even before COVID, we had 1 in 5 women in the United States taking an antidepressant on any given day. And that's actually women above 12 years old, 1 out of 5. We have 1 million veterans who are on disability for PTSD and treatment-resistant depression. We're losing 22 veterans a day in the United States because of suicide. And so when you see a big problem like that, you really have to ask yourself, how can we leverage emerging technologies, be they digital or medicinal, to drive, you know, to try to solve those problems? And so it was really just trying to really think about what's a big problem and how can we use emerging technologies to address the problem. And when you actually, with an open mind and with a calm mind and leaving politics aside, begin exploring what technologies are available, you start realizing that the research around psychedelics is incredibly promising. And so we can talk a little bit about that if you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we want to talk all about what New Life is and how it works. But before we ask you a question exactly about the company, I just wanted to pick up on something you said, because this is something that has always frustrated me as an early adopter in the tech space and having worked out in San Francisco in the dot-com years, is you're absolutely right that so often when we think about new technologies, they aren't technologies that are solving real-world problems. And I just wanted to get your perspective on why that is. Where did we go wrong?
It's sort of like saying, where did we go wrong with action films as opposed to, you know, deep movies that, you know, speak to us profoundly. I don't think in tech we've necessarily gone wrong. People can build whatever companies they want. On the other hand, I think as consumers, that's really where we have to ask ourselves, you know, why are we creating this demand for technologies and platforms that are ultimately dividing us and actually causing this mental health crisis, or at least contributing it to it, because there is a direct correlation between the time you spend on social networks and social media and your happiness, and it's inversely correlated. It's almost as if the social media platforms have become the junk food for our mind. And the same way, if we consume, you know, I don't hate junk food. I'm happy to, have a bag of chips or some, maybe not even skinny pop, occasionally real pop, from time to time. But it's, you know, when there's a whole generation of individuals, young people, who are spending between 3 and 8 hours a day on social media platforms, I mean, you just start realizing that the problem, you know, when we look, if we really look at ourselves in the mirror, is us the consumer. And so people in tech, I think, are just, you know, feeding this unfortunate demand that's been creating, which is actually making our mental wellness worse, not better. And so, you know, what we're trying to do with this company is start to provide better tools for the consumer. I saw that you began to follow you when you began showing leadership around mental wellness issues with the Bell Let's Talk sort of hashtag that was on Twitter a couple of years ago, where people actually began to open up about issues around depression and what are the apps that can help people live better, track their moods, and practice things like meditation. And we really view, you know, companies like ours as trying to be a force of good as opposed to a force that actually is making people feel less good.
Well, speaking of helping people feel better, how specifically is the company helping people's mental health? How are you going about diagnosing their mental health conditions, and how are you using psychedelics in the treatment as well as artificial intelligence to get an accurate picture of what they have and what they need to help them get better?
Sure. So we're pre-launch, we've launched our the ketamine, which is a psychedelic that we're using. So we've launched the ketamine side of the business. We're licensed in California, Florida, Texas, and Colorado, which is about 100 million people, about a third of the U.S. population. And between 90 to 120 days, we will have our full digital platform launched. What we're really trying to do is not just focus on giving individuals a transformative experience, which we view as a catalyst for change, and that's a psychedelic therapy in the first month. It's really what happens after the fact. But if you think about it, many people who are depressed or feeling anxious, and so many of us are feeling anxious coming out of COVID and the quarantine and all the suffering and sort of constant media bombardment we've faced over the last year and a half. A lot of us are suffering almost from PTSD. What we realize is we get in these patterns of thinking and these loops of thinking we just can't get out of. And so what psychedelics really do, and again, ketamine is legal, we're fully licensed, we're adults, I'm way too old to go to jail. It is they give individuals an opportunity to reset, because so many people get caught in these patterns of thinking. And it's as if, I think Michael Pollan, who wrote this a few years ago, the number one, sort of New York Times author, wrote a book, How to Change Your Mind. And he described the power of psychedelics, that all of us, as we get older, we get these almost grooves. If our brain was like a ski mountain, we get these tracks, these ruts, and it's very hard to get our patterns of thinking out of those ruts as we go sort of down, in this metaphor, the mountain. And what psychedelics allow us to do, it's as if they're a snowstorm that fills in those ruts. And of course, if we, the very next day, don't change our patterns of thinking, we're going to end up exactly where we were. On the other hand, with this opportunity to reset, we have this chance to go down a different way. And so what we're really doing is we're using initially the psychedelic therapy with very short personality tests, et cetera. We're leveraging telemedicine, which is something which began to be very adopted during COVID. So many people I know began, who never thought they'd see a therapist online and only believed in the inpatient sort of therapy model, began working with therapists online with very good results. And so what we're doing is we're just leveraging trends that already exist. There's this amazing research going on around psychedelics. We should have MDMA assisted psychotherapy approved in the United States in the next 12 to 18 months. The research there is absolutely incredible. Hopefully psilocybin/magic mushrooms will get approved in a couple of years. We have ketamine today. So we have these emerging medicinal technologies, which we think can drive much better patient outcomes. We have this trend of a wide acceptance of telemedicine. So we're able to offer sort of a remote, efficient, at-home kind of care model where we're leveraging telemedicine. And then, as you pointed out, we have AI, and the improvements of AI are outstanding and really impressive. We have some platforms which are offering AI-assisted therapy. They're sort of in their infancies. But, as Amber, you well know, in tech, you can't throw the dart to where the dartboard is today. In tech, the dartboard's always moving. And so we're really building a company that is going to have a huge impact today, but even more of an impact as technologies like AI improve and improve. So we're really building a company for the future and where technology is headed in the next couple of years.
Well, we just have about a minute left. And before we let you go, wanted to just get your take on the Miami tech scene right now, where you're based. We're talking to you about New Life, but there are a number of different companies down there. And Miami's really on fire right now. So could you just give us sort of a 30-second overview of what's happening in that space and why it's a good place for you to be?
It's an amazing place to be. And Miami's tends to be on fire as we roll into summer, but not with the titans of tech moving down here on a daily basis. It's incredible. Miami had a burgeoning tech scene. And in December, Mayor Francis Suarez, the mayor of Miami, sent out a tweet, which I think really changed the way people think about Miami. He sent out a tweet, or somebody sort of a very well-known individual in tech sort of put out that he was considering moving to Miami, and the mayor basically tweeted out, "How can I help?" And I think that was such a refreshing for people who've been in the Bay Area for a long time and dealing with local government and just bureaucracy and feeling like, for whatever reason, government wasn't supporting them, to have a mayor, just at, I think it was sort of 2 a.m. Miami time, tweet out, "How can I help? Please DM me." And then somebody very cheekily put billboards in San Francisco saying, thinking about the beautiful view of the Miami, beaches and skyline, saying, "Thinking about moving to Miami, how can I help? Please DM me." And the mayor's Twitter handle has just really created this movement. And so we've seen Jack Abraham from Atomic, John Oringer from Shutterstock, Shervin Pishvore from Uber, all investors in New, and all recent arrivals to Miami in the last year. So it's been absolutely incredible what's happened to Miami. Last week, we had a 12,000, as I call them, the crypto crazies in Miami for the largest Bitcoin crypto conference in the world. And I think that's just signs of more to come in Miami Tech. I have no doubt the best is yet to come for Miami and Miami Tech.
Well, listen, we wanted to thank you so much for joining us. If people want to check out the company, they can visit the company online. It's new.life. That's NUE.LIFE. Thank you so much for being with us, Juan Pablo.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you all. And thanks for your leadership on mental health issues.
Stay with us. We're talking self-driving startups with a new company that's focusing on the long-haul trucking industry.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Socially Speaking.
Before we get into Socially Speaking, just a reminder that this episode of The Feed is powered by TP-Link. TP-Link routers and technology can remove wireless pain points in your home so you have better performance for working, streaming, and gaming. And speaking of gaming, the TP-Link Archer GX90 AX6600 gaming router will give the gamers in your home greater capacity and low latency. Plus, the Archer GX90 is equipped with Wi-Fi 6 so they can game in the fast lane without disrupting other online activities like work and streaming. For gamers, this means no more lagging in the middle of a crucial shot, something my son will appreciate, so their network speeds are as fast as their reaction needs. The TP-Link Archer GX90 is easy to set up within minutes using the Tether app, and for more information, you can visit TP-Link online. Okay, guys, we're going to talk about the future of self-driving cars in particular. I wanted to tackle this subject because I had just read in one of our national newspapers that a woman from the University of Toronto, who is a computer science professor, just raised $83.5 million for her 3-month-old self-driving technology startup. And I thought this was a fascinating story that kind of is under the radar, but it really speaks to the importance of self-driving cars. Michael, I know you know a little bit about this story. So when we think about the future of self-driving vehicles, I think this is another indication that this is here to stay.
Yeah, it's here to stay, but I think that they're well and truly far off for truly autonomous vehicles. And what I mean by that is, and this is where it gets tricky, because most people don't fully understand or comprehend the difference. So when we're talking about fully autonomous vehicles, we mean that the entire car is able to be on a road, on a highway, and interact with its surroundings. We are far from that point. First of all, artificial intelligence will need to get a lot smarter for that to happen. But we will see, and we are seeing, and this is already happening, closed environments of autonomous vehicles. So that will happen obviously a lot sooner in certain environments, as I said, that it's very controlled. But we are far from fully autonomous on the road, on highways, because you have to think about it. They have to build in all of the technology and sensors and be able to read the environments. And we don't have all of these connected devices on buildings and roads and traffic poles and all this other infrastructure. It's not all connected yet. And you need it to be able to read and be connected with all of those devices as well to be able to ensure the safest roads possible, if that all makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. You know, it's interesting. I worked with someone recently in Canada who has a lot of knowledge in this space. And I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but he was saying that there will come a time where perhaps it's not potentially safe for humans alone to drive things like trucks and even cars. So I do think it's shifting quickly. Aaron, does this make you worried in terms of the future of transportation?
Michael's words actually reassured me and didn't make me worried for once. Just kidding, Michael.
Just so you know, that never happens. Anyone listening, that has never happened in the history of the shower.
thinking about the stages of unrolling all this digital infrastructure and physical infrastructure and extra light poles and smart sensors and things and whatever, I feel like it's so far away that I don't have to worry about it yet, and it doesn't have to make me worried. The only thing that worry, and I would love to see a separate lane, maybe if it, when we're talking about cargo trucking and long distance trucking across North America, which is a huge industry here, maybe a separate lane with even lane dividers would make me feel a bit better. But again, so far down the road that I'm not that scared of it yet.
And you know what? Speaking of separate lanes, it's funny that you say that, because I was in Orlando, I believe about a year or so ago. And I think, Michael, we've talked about this in terms of what's happening in Florida right now with testing of autonomous trucks. And they did have exactly that. There was sort of a separate lane where they were testing out the future of autonomous trucks for long haul transport. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So really, I mean, a lot of this, let's be honest, comes down to an infrastructure question. Do you have the infrastructure in place? Where are self-driving vehicles going to make sense? And there are lots of examples, I think, in Canada where we don't necessarily invest in infrastructure. I was thinking about this with the electrification of vehicles. I do not have a driveway. So if I wanted to have an electric vehicle, the only place that I could plug it in is walking to one of like two electric chargers on a street near me. And those are the only two in the entire neighborhood that I know about.
Well, this is the thing. So I think the infrastructure is not there yet, and we're not even close. Of course, in California, there are some companies that have actually been approved to use pilot programs for driverless rides. But even then, you may not have a driver in the passenger seat from a safety perspective, but you do have a safety driver on remotely. You have to have a safety operator. So again, it's not fully autonomous and somebody can take over if and when necessary. So it will happen. It will come. But we are far off. And of course, there's different levels of artificial intelligence, and there are different levels of autonomous driving. And so, you know, we have a lot of autonomous elements in cars at the moment, but definitely far from nobody in the driver's seat, no steering wheel, and you just getting in a car and it just zipping off, you know, following some computer system.
Yeah, we definitely have a long way to go. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with autonomous vehicles or transport within certain communities. You know, again, I look to Florida, where they have some newer communities where they are gated communities and, you know, they have brand new paved roads. And that could be a place where these type of I don't want to call them cars all the time, but maybe they're vans or trucks. Maybe they're just transport vehicles would make a lot of sense. So I think it's really going to be something that we're not going to see everywhere right out of the gate. It's going to take a little bit of time, but at the same time, I still think it's interesting to see what has taken place in terms of the investment of this particular company, especially knowing the company's only 3 months old. Pretty substantial.
That's a lot of money too.
Yeah, it absolutely is. All right. Well, let us know what you think about the future of autonomous vehicles. You can find us easily online, especially on Twitter at AmberMac and at MBancroft80. And please use the hashtag TheFeed.
This is The Feed with AmberMac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talk, channel 167.